safe were those evenings of the pre-war world, when firelight shone on green linoleum. I heard the church bells hollowing out the sky, deep beyond deep, like never-ending stars, and turned to Archibald, my safe old bear, whose woolen eyes looked sad or glad at me, whose ample forehead I could wet with tears, whose half-moon ears received my confidence, who made me laugh, who never let me down. I used to wait for hours to see him move, convinced that he could breathe. One dreadful day, they hid him from me as a punishment. Sometimes the desolation of that loss comes back to me, and I must go upstairs to see him in the sawdust, so to speak, safe and returned to his idolater. Safe in a world of trains and buttered toast, where things inanimate could feel and think, deeply I loved thee, 31 West Hill. At that hill's foot did London then begin, with yellow horse trams clopping past the plains to grey brick non-conformist Chetwynd Road, and on to Kentish Town, and barking dogs, and costers' carts, and crowded grocers' shops. I knew we were a lower, lesser world than that remote one of the carriage folk who left their cedars and brown garden walls in care of servants. I could also tell that we were slightly richer than my friends, the family next door. We owned a brougham, and they would envy us our holidays.
Goosey, goosey, gander, upstairs and downstairs in my lady's chamber. There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers, so I took him by the left leg and threw him downstairs.
Maud was my hateful nurse who smelt of soap and forced me to eat chewy bits of fish and was the first to tell me about hell, admitting she was going there herself. Sometimes, thank God, they left me all alone in our small patch of garden in the front, with clinker rockery and London pride and barren lawn and lumps of yellow clay as mouldable as smelly plasticine. I used to turn the heavy stones to watch the shiny red and waiting centipede which darted out of sight. The woodlouse, slow and flat. The other, greyish-bluey kind, which rolled into a ball till I was gone out of the gate to venture down the hill. My My dear deaf father, how I loved him then, before the years of our estrangement came. The long, calm walks on twilight evenings through Highgate Newtown to the cinema. The expeditions by North London trains to dim, forgotten stations, wooden shacks on oil-lit, flimsy platforms among fields as yet unbuilt on, deep in Middlesex. Most of all, I think my father loved me when we went in early morning pipe smoke on the tram down to the Angel, visiting the works. Fourth generation, yes, this is the boy. The smell of sawdust still brings back to me the rambling workshops high on Pentonville, built over gardens to White Lion Street, clicking with patents of the family firm founded in 1820. Following in father's footsteps was the theme of all my early childhood. With what pride he introduced me to old gentlemen, pin-striped commercial travellers of the firm, and tall proprietors of Bond Street shops. For myself, I knew as soon as I could read and write that I must be a poet. Even today, when all the way from Cambridge comes a wind to blow the lamps out every time they're lit, I know that I must light mine up again. My urge was to encase in rhythm and rhyme the things I saw and felt. I could not think. And so at sunset, off to Hampstead Heath, I went with pencil and with writing pad and stood tiptoe upon a little hill awaiting inspiration from the sky. Look, there's a poet, people might exclaim on footpaths near. The muse inspired my pen. The sunset tipped with gold St. Michael's Church. Shouts of boys bathing came from Highgate Ponds. The elms that hid the houses of the great rustled with mystery, and dirt-grey sheep grazed in the foreground. But the lines of verse came out like parodies of hymns A and M. The gap between my feelings and my skill was so immense, I wonder I went on. Once, when my father took me to the Tate, we stood enraptured by A Hopeless Dawn, the picture first to move me. 20 times, they told me, had Frank Bramley watched the flame expiring in its candlestick before he put it down on canvas. Guttering there, it symbolized the young wife's dying hope and the old mother's gazing out to sea. The meal upon the table lay prepared, but no good man to eat it. Put it down. Translate the picture into verse, my boy, and here's your opening. Through the humble cottage window streams the early dawn. The lines my father gave me sounded well. But how continue them? How make a rhyme?